in the darkest hour, whatever happens, know this, that no force on this earth can destroy us. No force. All the combined force of all the armies of the world can't destroy us unless we destroy ourselves. And today, with the masses of our people, that's what we are doing. We are destroying ourselves. If we allow a daughter of ours to go to a public school today and allow a black man to put his arm around her, and then to have a teacher to say that if this picture here stirs up emotions in you of disapproval, then you are mad. Your ideas are wrong. You should think this is beauty, a black arm around a white girl. If you're thinking it's right, you think it's beautiful. And that kind of thought is being taught to our children today. And that's another idea that I want to stress. One way or another, we have got to get our children in an environment where they will be taught the truth instead of these lies that they're being taught today. Otherwise, they're going to be everlastingly lost. Because it's young children, very young children, is when they develop the ideas generally that stay with them the rest of their life. And if we let them continue in the environments that most of them in, they'll grow up and join this monstrous hood out there. And I do... I want each one of you to consider yourself a sort of a god, really, at least an aristocrat. Because the holders of this idea is the elite that has the challenge before it of saving the greatest form of life that's been created on this earth. Could there be a greater challenge than that? Can any of you think of a greater challenge than that? Well, that's the challenge that's before us. And I believe with all of my being that if we hold true to these basic ideas that we believe in, or you might say idea, you could boil it all down to one idea, and that is that man, as he is today, is a means to an end, a stepping stone, a going upward. And if he's not that, he has no future. Because always remember that 25,000 years ago, in the wake of these ice ages I've been talking about, remember that man. He had a larger brain than the average white man today. So during all the thousands of years of civilization, the goings and comings of so-called civilized man, rather than going upward genetically and racially, we've actually been going downward. And we've not only got to preserve ourselves as we are today, but we've got to lay the foundation to take some steps upward from where we are now. Whatever happens, that's another thing, whatever happens, and my strong feeling is that we had better gear ourselves for difficulties. It may even be as difficult. The environment may finally get so bad that it will be as difficult as the environment of our ancestors that 20,000 years ago. It may get that bad. I'm not saying it's going to. But we need to gear ourselves that whatever happens, that if this earth turns upside down and rolls over on its side, that we'll be in there, true to these ideas that we must hold if we are not only to survive but to go upward and realize our destiny. And that, at least those thoughts and those thoughts alone, is what has kept me going. And so far as I'm concerned, I call it a holy religion. I call the holiness of preserving the gene pool that has created you and made you, and the ancestry that you owe your very existence to, your mind, your body, and the totality of your being, you're preserving that gene pool, guarding it and fighting for it to see that it lives on, unmixed and pure. I know of nothing holier in life. I know of no holier foundation for a religion. Let us analyze what has been in the past under the time of the old man and his way of life and his values. Imagine a race as ours really believing that the earth is really not important. That the important thing is to lay up treasures in heaven and to live a life getting yourself ready to go into this cloudy space up there somewhere where Jehovah and all the saints and all the good people that's lived have gone. Imagine our race with what we have achieved, with what we have dreamed, great enough to fly to the moon in every area of our life, great enough to make the glorious music of Beethoven and Mozart and Wagner, great enough to make the inventions of Thomas Edison. Our race is the only race that's done those things. If indeed they're important, they are important. We're the only ones that's done it. If you take what our race has contributed to civilization, well, you wouldn't have civilization. You'd have the tom-tom beats of the jungle and the gibberings of Asia. And that's all that mankind on this earth would be without us. Whoever dreamed of going to the moon but us? Whoever dreamed of the melodies that we have dreamed of? So that's what it gets down to. And we must remain true, whatever happens. Let the earth rumble. Let it tremble. Let the thunder roll. Let the lightning flash. And if we do, our race will be preserved. And another thing, always remember this. That any physical conflict is nothing in the world but the rumble of the thunder. The conflict that really counts is the conflict that takes place here in the soul. That's the important conflict. And you can lose all of these earthly battles. We could be invaded and conquered by a conquering army 10,000 times. But really, if you could still hold on to your soul, your beliefs, your ideas that have created you and made you, and the ideas that you must depend upon if you're going to have a future life on this earth, there is the conflict. And when the enemy takes your soul away from you, your body is no good. Anyway, you're lost, you're gone. And that's what the enemy is doing to us. I mean, our people generally. He's taking our soul away from us. Taking the truth away from us and giving us back the lies. Because the whole philosophy, the so-called philosophy, is a lie. Man does not live today to die and go to heaven floating around in outer space somewhere. He lives to procreate his kind. And to live on this earth as long as any form of life lives on this earth. That is his mission and his destiny and none other. And whatever we believe must be in harmony with that ultimate objective, that ultimate mission. Or it's utterly worthless. It means nothing. And any idea, any thought, any doctrine, any religion that is at war with this idea that we must depend on for our survival, whoever believes in those ideas, they are agents of death among us. Agents of death among us. And although we must love, it's always been a part of our soul, love. Indeed we love. We love the beautiful things of life. We are a beautiful race in every sense of the word. But today in this age, we must harden ourselves. We must harden ourselves in a way that our race has never done. We must harden ourselves in the sense that we can think of a million blacks in Africa, or a million Asiatics, or Indians in India and Asia, dying because there's not enough food to sustain life for them. But we've got to harden ourselves enough that we can think in those terms without having a guilt complex that we should have shared our food with them. And if we can't become that hard to think in terms like that, and those are the terms of survival that we've got to start thinking in terms of, we are doomed and we are lost. We don't have a destiny, we don't have a mission. But I don't believe that's true. I think out there are worlds and thousands of our kin that deep down inside of them believe exactly as we believe. And I really think it's more than proselyting. I think it's more than what the Christian calls going out and saving souls, because I think it's really genetic. I think if you basically feel what we feel and as we feel, that you've inherited from it's in your genes. And at the same time, I believe in proselyting. I believe in going out, reaching out, and trying to bring in our lost brethren. I believe in that. But the men who are going to do the saving, they are the chosen. They were born that way by the genes in their genetic makeup. And I strongly believe that. But still and all, we need the others too. But I know in my experience in Atlanta, when things got rough, when we were handed down and rolled off to prison, it was very few that stood by, but they were the chosen. They were the elite. The masses that were just there to beat a drum and blow a horn and hear Yankee-Doodle played, man, they were going like rats jumping off of a sinking ship. So expect that. And when the hard times come for us, expect that. Don't think they're all going to stand there at attention waiting for the axe to fall on their necks, because it's not going to be that way. It's only the true believers, the ones who belong body and soul to our ideas, only, they are the only ones that will stand. Well, I've already spoken. Let me see, what thought am I going to leave with? Is this: whatever happens, we can only be conquered by ourselves. And if we remain true to ourselves and true to these ideas that our survival depends on, we'll not only win this fight, but we'll be able to build the kind of a world that our forebears before us have been dreaming of all these centuries. And what kind of a world is that? Beautiful meadows, beautiful streams, woodlands, with a beautiful folk, and especially beautiful children, because the children are the future. Beautiful people playing in a beautiful country like this. We were just inspired yesterday as we rolled up through Indiana and Illinois. Such beautiful land. The corn as far as you could see, beautiful grain. We have such a wonderful land here that's been given by those that's gone before. Not only a wonderful land, but such a wonderful race. And so far as I'm concerned, it's the holiest obligation, the holiest duty, to do what we can to see that form of life continues on this earth. There's no higher, holier religion than that. And I know if we work along those lines, that we will win. I thank you.
And now, a final word about the organization that made this series of tapes possible, the National Alliance. Your speaker, Kevin Alfred Strom. You who are listening to this tape, and I who produced it, do not know each other. I do not know how you came upon this speech. But what I do know, with a fair degree of certainty, is this. You share with us a concern for the future of our race and nation, for our children, and for our children's children. You share with us dismay and revulsion at the growing degeneracy of our society. you share with us profound misgivings about the wisdom of turning our beloved America into a third world slum. One thing that should give you some consolation is the fact that you are not alone. More and more Americans are withdrawing from the political process, believing it to be an exercise in futility, a farce in which the voter has no real choice. On America's campuses, the dictatorship of the politically correct is being openly challenged. Winds of change are starting to blow. With each new hate crime law, with each new affirmative action program, with each new interracial situation comedy, with each new gun confiscation law, and with each new wave of third world immigration, the vast and angry army of the disaffected grows. What then can be done? This vast army of disaffected white Americans presents us with an opportunity. But the task before us is immense and difficult. The power and money of the enemy seem limitless. Even taken as a whole, the patriotic forces in this country at this time are totally unequal to any contest for power. These cold, hard facts, unpleasant as they are, help us refine our strategy and direct our efforts toward what is actually possible. As Dr. William Pierce said at the first General Convention of the National Alliance, our task is not to persuade a numerical majority of the American population that we are right, but rather to build the numerical minority whose values coincide with ours into a majority of will and determination. For it has always been dedicated minorities that have been the makers of history. The majority will stand on the sidelines in every conflict until they are forced to act. Of course, these facts do not free us from the responsibility to recruit large numbers of people, many tens of thousands more than we have now. But we must always keep in mind that we are recruiting an elite, a vanguard group that will be able to build a professional organization and an uncompromising movement that one day will lead the masses of our people out of their slavery and degradation. There is much to be done. The National Alliance needs many different kinds of members. We need writers and carpenters, physicists and photographers, architects and actors, businessmen and artists. We need those who see the necessity of our task and are willing to give everything they've got to the effort. We need members who can inspire that kind of dedication in others, members who will lead lives of exemplary sacrifice and devotion. You may think we're asking a lot. Too much, perhaps. We do this because we are serious about winning this struggle for our people. We do this because we can't afford to waste our efforts. The stakes are too high. We ask for members who will bring real resources, skills, and abilities to the problems at hand. And we ask for members with exceptional dedication, patience, and persistence, because nothing less will do the job. Presently, the National Alliance has, through National Vanguard Books, the ability to inspire and educate the best elements of our people. We will continue this effort on an ever-increasing scale. We will select from these individuals those who are willing to become supporters or active participants in our efforts. We will expand our capabilities, not only increasing the publication and distribution of printed materials, but branching out into other areas, including radio and television. National Alliance spokesmen will appear more and more frequently on college campuses, on radio talk shows, and on television news programs. As our capabilities increase, we will begin to produce our own radio and television programs, to be aired on cable systems as well as on purchased commercial airtime. And always, the impression conveyed to the public will be one of strength, intelligence, truthfulness, and professionalism. I hope that you will subscribe to National Vanguard and that you will avail yourself of the marvelous educational opportunity offered by the National Vanguard Books catalog and its recommended reading list. As you examine and consider the books and magazines that we publish and distribute, and as you hear the words of great patriots in this series of speeches, I hope you'll come to understand that no other organization has the skilled personnel, the seriousness, the understanding of fundamental principles, the fighting spirit, or the realistic chance for ultimate success of the National Alliance. Despite the decadence of our nation and our race's peril, you and I are lucky to be living in these times. Unlike the nationalists of Eastern Europe before the fall of communism, we do not have to work in secret. Our publications are not yet outlawed. Our freedom of speech has not yet been completely stifled. But if we fail, if patriotic white Americans do nothing, then all these things, and worse, much worse, are coming. If you think you have what it takes, then I'm asking you to join us. Whether you can best serve by joining your efforts to ours here at the National Office, or in the role of an activist and spokesman for our cause, or as an influential member of society, helping our work with influence and intelligence from behind the scenes, or as a supporter, providing the necessary financial and physical infrastructure that makes all our other work possible. You now have an opportunity to become a part of our great movement for the cleansing and restoration of our nation and civilization. Future generations, if there are any, will look with favor upon those who did their duty. Write us for membership requirements. Our address is National Alliance, Post Office Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946.